Project Lawful aka Plane Crash by Yarwain aka Eliezer Yudkowsky and Lynn Tamande. My fun research project has more existential risk than I anticipated. Episode 142.
Carissa's hanging out with her boyfriend, trying to make unforced conversation about unrelated things.
Keltham will have moved on to unrelated things then, though probably not without having expanded at least little on concepts like, yep, Carissa sure did call what happens to overly good people if they try to improvise taking care of other people with mental health problems. A lot of Dathilan is set up to route people like that into actually adequate situations for them. Like quiet cities designed not to drive them crazier or unhappier in 100 subtle ways. Or, failing that, make it really clear to them that it's 100% okay. If they want to just go into cryonic suspension, their friends and family will be fine. It's not their duty to stick around. Mylal knows what he's doing, right? He should definitely know what he's doing much better than Keltham would. Keltham can't improvise a handling mechanism better than what Cheliax already has in place. At least, Keltham could possibly think that, if he didn't know that everything about Galarian was simultaneously broken by his standards, and that their mental health system is probably just hell takes care of it, which Keltham needs to remember is okay, and not what he should be focusing on from either a good or an evil perspective. Good says, help all of Galarian, and not one person close to you. Evil says, don't make Dad's mistake. But if they are supposed to be talking about unrelated things, Keltham will talk about unrelated things.
Mylal has decades of experience with helping people deal with shock, grief, death, and so on, at the World Wound. Keltham probably finds something inadequate about how Galarian handles sad people because has anything not been disappointing to him yet, but she really, really does not think this is something he could handle well. Also, priests are sort of intrinsically comforting because they're known quantities. Asmodeus chose them. They're going to be predictably his servants. Unrelated things.
Keltham did need to check whether Sever thought that the level of distraction being imposed on the other researcher candidates was high enough that it should partially invalidate the test from Keltham's perspective. His model of Sever's model said no, but he needs to check with her. Seriously, like in real life, with respect to how normal researcher candidates work, not invincible Carissa or Chellish dignity should universe answers.
She doesn't think so. Her guess is that they mostly, if they noticed at all, rather than being absorbed in their math, went, wow, that's weird, I wonder what went wrong. And then Mylal came in and they figured they didn't need to worry about it. He could give them a little extra time if he wanted.
That doesn't square up with anything else about how Keltham was imagining people or societies worked, but at this point, Keltham is just going to wait for Mylal to report back, rather than quiz Carissa about it.
Here's Mylal. Looks slightly worn and sad, but not much more so than his usual self. Keltham, I need to ask, do you have particular reason to believe that Talandria was having, how did you put it, a mental health emergency? Near as I can tell, Corva Talandria cracked under test pressure in what seems like a very ordinary way, excepting only that I would have thought a screened candidate for this job would have been tougher than that.
Okay, hold on, stop. Come to a complete halt. Go into reverse. What do you mean, cracked under test pressure in a very ordinary way? Ordinarily, people don't... crack?
Nobody in Dathilan ever bursts into tears while taking a math test? Mylal is certain that this happens in Taldor.
Possibly if their appendix suddenly bursts, but then you say out loud you're having a medical emergency, you don't become mentally disabled to the point where you don't even trust yourself to walk out of the room and need to stay around other people who can subdue you if necessary. Okay, I think we probably all need to back up and check a lot of basic assumptions. You first, why would anybody burst into tears while taking a math test?
Corva, sudden emergency question. Do people in Taldor just walk out of exam rooms if they're about to cry? Because in retrospect, it's incredibly obvious that's what they do in Dathilan, unless they're completely disabled.
No, not unless they're having a bigger breakdown than the crying itself and outright throwing the test. I'm not certain, but I'm pretty sure, for most tests.
Right. Well, it's obvious that we were all living in different realities, and now it's time to desperately make like there were only two of those and not three.
Myllyal is trying to explain the underlying patterns of, forget the math part, teenagers breaking down crying during any kind of test in which they don't know the answers, and the future of their career is at stake.
When you don't know the answers, and your whole future career is at stake, it's not a good time to start crying.
Yes. That is why people who can't master the not crying on important math tests life skill are less great candidates for the world wound. Outside the world wound, the stakes are not that high all the time. And Talandria apparently hadn't been exposed to any situation this high stress in her life before.
Okay, but if it's an actual emergency self-management situation requiring a temporary fix, there's like 12 different things anybody could do to switch off or dissociate an emotion, none of which anybody in Galarian has any training with, causing them all to have the emotional management options of, like, 10-year-olds, except insofar as they have sheer brute willpower for plowing through anyways. Right, updating. Keltham still doesn't get why Talandria didn't just walk out of the room.
Because social conventions are heavily against just walking out of a room during an exam. It's the sort of thing that gets somebody dropped from their hard-to-get-into wizard academy. And if the rules were any different on Project Lawful, nobody told Talandria that, Myllyal realizes this may not make sense to Keltham for a while.
Carissa, is there a fast explanation here relative to your model of my model?
Probably, like half of people are the kind of person who has sufficiently poor emotional management skills, they start crying during an important test. Maybe 6 in 10 girls, 2 in 10 boys? Yes, I know that doesn't make half when I started being more specific in my head. Those are the numbers that came out. The Wizarding Academies try to filter it out because at the World Wound, not having emotion management skills will get people killed. I expect the project also filtered for it. So Talandria must have never done it before, but it's not rare, generally. Sometimes one might start crying during a test, recover, and finish the test, and this would be much less problematic for their continued presence in their Wizarding Academy than leaving the room during the test. One might even cry during a test without anyone in charge noticing if the room doesn't have several security who've been told to communicate as much as possible to Keltham.
Keltham will now attempt to adapt for the fact that his entire worldview, all of his social reflexes, all of his thinking patterns, his deep implicit ideas about who is supposed to do what when, that his ideas of what he is supposed to think about and what a startup founder is supposed to think about, are all inhabiting a different reality that is not this reality. Okay, so if Talandria wasn't having a complete mental breakdown, does her cracking during math tests correlate with a rare Galarian neurotype that is very talented at chemistry? And if I don't hire people who crack on math tests, I don't get to have any top percentile chemistry talents? It's actually pretty hard, especially when you can only do it one piece at a time, wherever your mental attention happens to be focused that instant, and your mental attention is also being focused by patterns from the wrong reality.
No? And I have no idea how you got there? I think you probably shouldn't hire her, like I said. I'd think it was fine to hire her for a normal chemistry project, but not one where we get attacked by Cuthites and might all end up half-keepers.
Okay, but the conventional wisdom out of civilization is that a project like this one would end up with a lot of very weird people, and you still want to exclude the mentally unstable ones, but you've got to be really careful that you're not excluding, like, Lady Avaricia. Does Galarian possibly just not have the whole thing where 4 top chemists in the world marry in pairs, and their kids marry, and one of their kids is an unbelievable genius chemist, and the other one manages to commit true suicide at 19?
And it's not that the one murdered the other? If I heard that, I wouldn't be very surprised, but I also don't know of it as a known phenomenon.
So basically, your planet doesn't have any geniuses, except maybe via artifact headband. But, on the flip side, it's fine to go harder on screening mental traits in your employment process. Not the most urgent question, I guess. I'm continuing to feel very much out of my depth here. Carissa, Ferrer, you're both satisfied that things are proceeding here, basically as they should be proceeding, in Galarian? I'm not supposed to administer a new math test to her in private and see if that makes a difference?
I bet she'd do better on a new math test in private, at least plausibly so. But the whole reason I think you shouldn't hire her is that this is an incredibly weird, isolating, destabilizing project, and you should hire people who are unusually stable and capable for it.
It took him a split second to remember Keltham expected the lower-ranked person to speak first and cross that with the chosen being beneath him in Alter Cheliax. But Mayol did remember in time to speak in the correct real Asmodean order, which is also the correct Alter Cheliax ordering. I'd mostly say things are proceeding as they should, except for a slight concern about how this makes two of them. Asmodia first, though that was seemingly very different in nature, then Talandria, who plausibly could have looked like a stable candidate up until this point, and then cracked for the first time when she was under more pressure than ever before. Neither case by itself would worry me the way the two do side by side. I'm having Talandria privately go through a light security screening to truth-spell her about whether she's said everything she knows to be relevant. But if there's nothing in there that security decides we need to know, they don't tell us. My understanding is that Talandria has had relatively little law exposure, and I do think there's a tendency for more talented wizards to be a little less stable sometimes in Galarian. The state did send us an assortment of interesting people. I only ordered the screening because, how did you put it? Why trust what you can verify? I have made it clear to security that any previously undisclosed involvement of law-based reasoning in Talandria's breakdown is something we need to know about.
Well handled, then. On that part of it, I don't know enough to judge your performance on the rest. What did you decide about Asmodia's request to hire her?
Unless you know something I don't about Talandria being more volatile than she looks, I'm leaning yes. But with my watching the situation, closely enough that if it starts to go wrong, I can shut it down after Asmodia learns a valuable life lesson and before she loses significant usefulness to your project.
What does shutting it down in that case entail for Talandria?
Stowing her in some other high-security installation that could use another second circle and isn't quite as massively vital to the future of Cheliax and Galarian. Or hell for a couple of years, which I personally think is an option Talandria ought to be jumping on, given that she has a rare option to do that and get resurrected at state expense. But that's an option I haven't pressed, beyond gently mentioning that it exists. Compared to most people, priests of Asmodeus are known to have unusually correct opinions about that. Mayol smiles slightly, but visibly.
Why are most people wrong about that, though?
Let the church know if you ever figure that out. Any else?
No, thanks.
It's my job. He departs.
Seeing him always makes me feel bad about how much nonsense our project gets up to that he has to write reports to Igorian about.
I figure any week we haven't started another God War yet is a week Mayol ought to be grateful to us. After all, he's the one who said that the key to happiness is to start with low expectations, and then, presumably, never update them so you're constantly pleasantly surprised. That part? He didn't say explicitly, but I don't see how else this trick would work.
Yes, I think that's it. Wouldn't work for a Doth Ilani, but works quite well, if you're Chelish. I don't know if he's managed to keep them so low as to be pleased with the lack of a God War, though.
Yeah, if we don't start another God War soon, or some sort of project disaster, Mylel may start taking current conditions for granted. Then his hedonic treadmill, niceness demand level, will adjust. We can't let that happen. Any gods out there that would be really easy for us to annoy?
Callistria's supposed to be quick to anger?
And what pisses off Callistria?
Raping people, abusing your wife. That's probably not the most strategically useful answer to give. If I were desperately trying to translate into Doth Ilani, I would claim that she hates it when someone defects against you and you don't defect back, but I suspect that if for some reason you were to spend a week studying Callistria's teachings, you'd tell me that's not the right translation exactly.
Right then. Well, there's one god whose teachings I agree with too much to offend in that particular way, though I continue to have no idea how she's not lawful neutral.
And that's today's first crisis done with. Welcome to Project Lawful, by the way. At least we have cookies. Why is Asmodia feeling so weirdly cheerful about having Corva assist on her wall? It's not the first time Asmodia's had minions. Asmodia in Ostenso would sometimes force other students to do things for her. Because if Asmodia didn't sometimes do that, she'd obviously be one of the academic victims who got forced to tutor and serve more vicious students. Is it just that she's got more leverage over Corva than Asmodia has ever had over anyone before, and now she can invest in training Corva to be more useful and have that actually pay off? The Chelish dialect of Tal'Dane does have a word for friend. It just doesn't use it for anything.
Yeah, sorry for causing you a headache already. So, I know you have visible and invisible things to juggle, but are there specific things we know we need to get out ahead of right now while we can?
I think at this point, I sit you down and explain to you about the tropes. It's an unexplained part of the entire wall, from your standpoint, and you can't work without knowing.
Right, what, are those? And are they going to cause her to turn out like Yaisa? Somehow, she really, really, really doesn't want to be another Yaisa.
All right, so, this is something of a long and very weird story. I'll try to separate facts from inferences, and try to lead you away from thoughts about whether the gods who once were human are trying to fake out Chiliax into believing in this whole story, just in case I was right about that originally. Kel'Thim landed near the World Wound at a point where he would run out of the cold into a Chelish installation. He didn't land in the middle of the ocean, or for that matter, materialize 100 yards off the ground, or in space, or in the plane of elemental fire. If you think about a cloud of probability density spread out evenly across all of Galarian's surface, to say nothing of our larger multiverse, including other planets and other planes, it's very obvious that Kel'Thim didn't land at random according to a cloud of probability like that. Something put Kel'Thim where he landed. Something that, one infers, cared about what would happen after he landed there. We then have the question, besides Kel'Thim not just dying on the spot, in what other ways was this force maybe selecting where to put Kel'Thim? Maybe not just within Galarian, but inside our whole multiverse, maybe even many possible multiverses. Kel'Thim seemed to believe that Doth Ilan knew for sure that existence was very wide, much wider than just our multiverse and Doth Ilan's universe that he showed us. When Kel'Thim ran out of the cold into that Chelish installation, the first person who could cast tongues to speak with him, it turned out, was Carissa Sevar. Kel'Thim and Sevar, I'm told, are matched improbably well in terms of their romantic compatibility. Sevar is, to this day, the person who understands Kel'Thim best out of everyone who's tried, including the Queen of Chelyax, with whatever ludicrous levels of splendor she can bring to bear. Experienced honeypot instructors specializing in lawful good targets are saying that they do not understand why anything Sevar is doing works as well as it does. And Sevar, frankly, strikes me as being more at risk of falling in love with Kel'Thim for real than she'll admit to the rest of us. I'm guessing here, yes. But if my guess is right, you would not expect an average Chelish woman, a random Chelish woman, to fall in love for real with Kel'Thim. You wouldn't expect a random Chelish woman to be tempted. From Kel'Thim's perspective, Galarian is even more improbable on that level. Kel'Thim has sexually sadistic tendencies. His lawful good world tried to make sure he never found out about that. Kel'Thim thinks that's because Doth Ilan has no masochists. He thinks masochism itself is unlikely, that it's not a kind of thing that heritage selection would produce naturally. He thinks that people who want to be hurt, who enjoy pain, who want to be taken and forced into submission, would end up in dangerous life situations having fewer children. If the sadists of Doth Ilan knew what they really wanted, they'd just be sad, so it was dangerous information to them. You could counter-argue, and I think Sevar has, that tendencies like that could actually help people survive if they ended up in situations very common in Galarian. Doth Ilan, maybe, has fewer of those situations. Or maybe Kel'Thim is right, and the gods intervene to make masochism be a thing in Galarian. The point is that from Kel'Thim's perspective, he ended up in a world where sexual desires of his that had no counterpart in Doth Ilan Desire is where, Keltham thinks, he would not expect a counterpart to exist in most reasonable parts of reality, could find fulfillment here. The masochists he ran into are wizards, meaning he can try harder to hurt them without damaging them too much. Keltham has healing powers he can use on his masochists afterwards. These are all things that Dathilan doesn't have, that Dathilan thinks ought to be unlikely, that they wouldn't expect to find in a random world. All of them make life much more convenient for somebody with Keltham's sexuality. And even if Keltham is wrong about Golarion having been selected for that, even if most worlds out there are just like that, and Dathilan is the weird one out for having no healing magic and no masochists, there remains the implausibly good match with Sevar in particular. You might speculate then, you might infer, though it is not of itself an observation, as Keltham teaches to distinguish, that whatever landed Keltham here was, possibly, trying to set him up with a romance. It's not a very nice romance, really. Not the nicest romance Keltham could possibly have had. He did end up in Cheliax with all of his romantic interests constantly lying to him about everything. It's not something you'd do to Keltham if you were just trying to be nice to him, make sure he found sexual and romantic fulfillment. It's something you'd do to Keltham if you were putting him somewhere that a romance novel would start up around him, a novel with a dramatic, conflict-riven plot. In particular, a Dathilani romance novel, with common patterns, tropes, out of a Dathilani romance novel. Keltham doesn't know all his love interests are lying to him, but he knows he landed in a situation where he's around a number of different interesting girls with interesting different backgrounds and special powers. That, he found suspicious, after he arrived. He doesn't know how weird it is that Pilar Pineda was selected as Caden K. Leon's oracle and bestowed with cookie powers. He doesn't know that Ione is the one oracle chosen of Nethys, but he knows that he's around other girls with special powers, an improbable and surprising number of them, and that is to him an obvious signature of a Dathilani romance novel. Or, as Dathilan calls it, an Aerolarp. Keltham has tried making predictions about how events would happen around him if he had in fact been selected and placed somewhere that further events would develop, by unbroken prophecy, in the way of an Aerolarp. We are concealing from Keltham how many of those predictions have, in fact, come true. In Alter Cheliax, Sevar is not the chosen of Asmodeus. There is nothing special about Sevar that is causing Hel to delay its purchase of her soul, or, as we've presented that to Keltham, making afterlife arrangements. Then, Sevar should be able to make her afterlife arrangements and get her own arcane sight. Keltham predicted that, when Sevar went off to try to sell her soul, something mysterious would happen that prevented her from selling her soul. He didn't know about Sevar's previous failed attempt. He just predicted that she'd fail that time, because it would be what happened in a Dathilani romance novel. Sevar turned out not to be able to sell her soul again. They arranged for her to get permanency'd detect magic somehow. No, I don't know the details. Sevar came back apparently all cheerful about having sold her soul, for arcane sight plus enough spell silver to have an excuse for being able to make Keltham corrupting magic items later. Keltham had a panic attack about whether there was some incredibly clever reason that the government of Cheliax would need to lie to him and fake selling Sevar's soul and somehow fake the arcane sight, because that would be what happened in an Aerolarp. Sevar managed to talk Keltham down from his being, in fact, completely right about all of everything, including Sevar being a hidden cleric, very likely, just based on how the rest of that went, but Asmodeus is not going to get into that. That was one incident. There were others, particularly including a conflict with the Queen of Cheliax that I am apparently not allowed to know all about. Presumably because Keltham won embarrassingly hard. From Keltham's perspective, he successfully managed to avert all of the antagonisms with the queen that his tropes would predict, casting severe doubt on his whole Aerolarp theory. From everyone else's perspective, I'm told practically everything that Keltham predicted actually happened, but in a way where we prevented him from seeing it. Welcome to Project Lawful. At least we have cookies. And if we ever run out of cookies, one of Keltham's likely romantic interests can suddenly appear with additional cookies, namely the extremely devout Asmodian, who was chosen as oracle by Caden Kylian, whose curse, which we call snack service, has really been quite helpful in, for example, ridding Agorian of lawful good spies and giving apparently good advice about how to corrupt Keltham further, and also offering snacks. Wherever Keltham was placed inside Golarion, or somewhere larger than that, it somehow rendered that a totally reasonable thing for a chaotic good god to do around a lawful evil project. If we're inside a Dathilani romance novel, it's probably not one that takes itself very seriously. Hopefully I don't get smote for saying it. But, you know, the sort of being who could do all that could probably see me thinking it, even if I didn't say it, so I might as well say it.
Do you, want me to voice my first 10 objections to this theory, so that you can explain to me why they are stupid?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Independent of what I might think of all of the specific pieces of evidence you just brought up, am I getting it right that Keltham is the one who came up with this theory, and he came up with it because he felt like he was in a Dathilani romance novel after Chelia spent an enormous amount of resources providing him with a harem of vulnerable, pretty wizard girls who could keep up with him intellectually, but also hung on his every word and wanted to have sex with him, specifically because the crown was trying to bribe him into helping us by making his stay here as closely resemble his wildest fantasies as possible? Because that seems like the sort of thing that might skew someone's sense of whether they were in a romance novel.
They provided him the harem within hours of him arriving in Golarion. Transcripts show it was Saver who first made the suggestion, after reading Keltham's mind about how his own civilization hadn't valued himself and his kind of people, and how he'd wanted to become rich and give Dath Elan's next generation hundreds of himself, whether Dath Elan liked that or not. Sivar's proposal was to seduce Keltham with a sense of himself and his kind of person being valued by Chaliax more than civilization had. Mayol made the call after getting a vision from Asmodeus, which I don't think had that specifically in it, but we could ask him. Keltham wasn't a cleric then, so we have a full transcript of what went through his mind at the point he realized why there were so many pretty girls around him. Namely, he thought Chelyax wanted his heritable variations for high intelligence. He thought that was a totally reasonable thing to do with an alien visitor and that his civilization would try the same thing. The first point at which Keltham showed overt outward signs of suspicion was when he had everyone in the class independently rate how much we thought we had an unusual background or a weird problem for him to solve that he'd find out about if he romanced us. And also, we had to guess what we thought everyone else's average answer would be. We didn't have eyes on his thoughts then, and didn't understand why. Didn't know how to game anything. The call was made to have us answer independently, in hopes that would look right to him. Keltham's prediction, which came true from his perspective, was that there'd be five special girls, only some of whom knew about some of the others.
I'm not suggesting that the harem of pretty girls is his explicit reason for believing any of this. He's not that stupid. I'm suggesting that being surrounded by a harem of pretty girls might still affect his sense of how similar his overall situation is to a romance novel, and that it might affect the sorts of theories one generates about their circumstances. As far as so many of his girls being special, which couldn't have been the thing that originally roused his suspicion, unless I'm misunderstanding the timeline here. Almost all of them are special by way of being oracled by particular gods, right? It was already otherwise obvious that multiple gods were trying to court Keltham. And if the person you're trying to court is a teenage boy who is more vulnerable to love than most, who sure seems to be making pretty full use of the harem that was provided to him, and whose information about the world and contact with other people is being filtered by Chelyax, well, I don't think that it's a particularly surprising tack to take. The fact that it matches something that happens in the specific romance novels that Keltham has read and remembers, the ones that made an impression on him, is information about Keltham, information about how to make an impression on him that other gods could, in principle, have accessed. That doesn't require us to actually be in a romance novel. It just requires the romance novels that Keltham reads to reflect something of how one might go about courting him in reality. Whenever Keltham interacts with information about the world that isn't either part of the web of lies we've spun up around him, or a consequence of a god trying to court him, not literally always, I guess, but often, he doesn't seem to act like it's narratively consonant, or like the world makes sense to him as a story. Sometimes he acts like it can't possibly be true, sometimes he acts like it just doesn't make any sense to him, and sometimes it's so alien that he automatically writes a different version of events in his head, one that has only a very tenuous relationship with whatever is actually happening.
That's a dangerous line of thinking, if Asmodia's earlier guess was right about what her patrons might be trying to conceal. At the point where Caden Kalian decides that his best option is cursing the project's most devout Asmodean with snack powers, which Keltham reacted to with considerable surprise and astonishment, not with a sense of being courted, so far as I can see. We have to ask if Keltham was put somewhere that this was made to be a clever thing for Caden Kalian to do, I think. Obviously, Caden Kalian, from his own perspective, is trying to accomplish something. There's a question of what. But there's a larger question of how it came to be the case that this thing could be best accomplished by giving Pilar cookie powers. We don't believe this theory because Keltham believes it. We believe it because the theory's predictions keep coming true. Keltham guessed, knew, that I was an asexual before any of us knew what that was, because we appear in Dath. Ilani romance novels like that. So I lied to him and told him that I'd felt a couple of flashes of desire in my life. And I have, at this point, met Keltham. He likes confusing people. Supposedly, it's to train strong minds that don't weakly rely on being told how reality works. I think it may be what Dath Ilan does with all its repressed sadism. Either way, the part where Keltham is in a really strange world to him fits with his theory. The part where we're all lying to him and he has to figure that out fits with his theory, which is why we keep trying to convince him that he's not in an arrow LARP. Though one of the rays of hope for Cheliax is that Keltham has also said it's possible that he's just the oblivious boyfriend of our story about mastering his law. The other ray of hope is that Keltham is already going outside of what Dath Ilan thinks is good sexual behavior. Maybe this is a story about our corrupting him, and we just have to do that before time runs out on his inevitably seeing through the lie.
I don't mean that Keltham is confused by us lying to him. I mean that, okay, the theory here is that all of Galarian, possibly the entire set of planes we have access to, was created for the benefit of telling this specific, inane story about a normal teenage boy from another universe who is suddenly extraordinary and surrounded by extremely special girls who are fawning over him, which is all secretly a plot by the forces of hell to corrupt him to evil, which might or might not work depending on our author's taste for tragedy or comedy and also whose side they're on in the first place. Do I have that right? The scope of this theory?
Keltham thinks that reality is very large and we were selected for him, not created. Which does make a difference to the law of our strategic playing, though only at the level where the Most High oversees all our moves. In particular, it matters whether, if we consider doing something that would cause Keltham to have retroactively never arrived here, the alternative we're negotiating against is this world having never existed, or this world never getting a Keltham. Leaving that aside, I'd point out that Keltham is, in fact, a normal teenage boy who suddenly ended up in a very weird-to-him universe where he's extraordinary and has a lot of extremely special girls fawning over him, as is secretly a plot by the forces of hell to corrupt him to evil. This part is not, in fact, in question. It's an observation, not an inference. The question is why. And the theory is that it's all part and parcel of the same force that put Keltham down at the World Wound, where Sever would be the first person he'd talk to.
Sure. I agree that it happened. I suppose the idea of selection versus creation does punch some kind of hole in what I was about to say, but I'm going to say it anyway, just so it's said, because I haven't figured out how to think about the selection thing yet. If our world had been created specifically in order to engineer this story about Keltham, there's a lot going on in this world. It has a lot of elements that don't obviously match to any kind of story, but also a lot of elements that match to stories that are less stupid than this one. It sure looks to me like whoever created this world had better taste than an entity that would have this story as its end game. Better stories have been told before, and more detailed, interesting, and sensible elements of reality have been introduced than the ones that make up whatever the abyss is happening here. Probably that won't make sense as an objection when I've considered all the implications of the selection thing, or whatever the reasoning was behind us having the ability to cause Keltham to have retroactively not landed in Galarion, given that he's already here, but whatever. Raise you an alternative theory, not one I think is obviously true, but one that I've been thinking about for a couple days now and think ought to be considered. Have you heard of Hermea, beyond the name?
I don't even think I've heard of the name. Ostenso Academy does not leave time for anything except studying and plotting.
Corva is also from an elite wizard academy, but that's not worth commenting on. It's harder than most countries to find information on, maybe because it's one of the few countries that gives Cheliax a run for its money in terms of actual functionality as a society. Near as I can tell, though, Hermea is a young island nation, founded post-prophecy, run by a gold dragon, obviously lawful good, that only accepts the best and brightest applicants as immigrants. A society of only smart people, wise people, talented people, careful and meticulous people, and their children. A society that aims at the sort of heredity, optimization that Keltham sometimes talks about. A glorious experiment meant to push the limits of what humankind is capable of. Keltham's obviously not from Hermea, but suppose that Hermea isn't the only experiment of its type. Suppose that someone or something more powerful than a gold dragon managed to seed another planet with another set of humanity's best and brightest, to see what they would create, found some way to bathe the planet in anti-magic, to push them in other directions, found some way of shielding them from the interference of other gods. And then suppose that that shielding cracked somehow, and one of our gods was able to pull one of these Dath Ilani here. Perhaps you'd pick a Dath Ilani who would be most useful to your servants here on Galarian. One who would find the environment of his ancestors to be something that matched his particular fantasies and suppressed desires beyond his wildest dreams. Certainly you would ensure that the circumstances of his arrival here were useful to your followers, as opposed to allowing him to immediately die. Suppose that Keltham was selected for us rather than us for Keltham. It explains Keltham's observation that he's obviously a human like us, who eats our food and was born of some similar ancestry. It explains his planet's hidden history very neatly, if the planet doesn't have any. It explains why Keltham would have a latent desire for sadism, despite being from a planet where people have apparently never heard of sadism or masochism, and it's less, wild than supposing that we're living in a specifically Dath Ilani romance novel.
The fact that Keltham's world sealed off their history has never been far from my own mind. What with Asmodia having a strong sense, somehow, that it is her duty alone to also prevent the actual world of Galarian from ending up destroyed, because of how it seemed to imply that they must have encountered something incredibly dangerous, something dangerous just to know about, that they had to seal off all their history just to prevent anyone from hearing about again. As for your brilliant new theory that Dath Ilan has no history because their world was just constructed like that, not very long ago, do you know what I think of that? Well, I'll tell you. I think it's ridiculously obvious in retrospect is what I think. Keltham has given arguments about how his world could have ended up with their incredibly lawful good system already in place at the point where they sealed their history. Why it had to end up there, given that they had no magic. Those arguments always seemed a lot more stretched to me than everything else Keltham says. So, yeah, obviously, if you look over all of the larger reality, most of the places where everybody grows up believing that their world sealed off their history a while ago for mysterious reasons are places where their whole world was created then. I'd say there'd obviously be some elaborate excuse, but it doesn't sound like Keltham's world even had an excuse. And those worlds will also have an incredibly powerful and mysterious conspiratorial group that knows the forbidden truth and secretly controls the government, who were put there by whoever created that world to keep it on track for its intended purpose, why did I not see this earlier?
Well, I am getting the sense that you've been very busy these past few weeks. But we don't have a reason why that's stupid, then?
I'm not seeing a reason. But then, I'm not the only one with eyes on this problem. So maybe somebody else thought of it, and saw a reason it obviously couldn't be true, and didn't tell me about it. If in fact that's just a brilliant idea that nobody else involved had, at all. Well, let me put it this way. If your ambitions previously involved living the rest of your life without ever once coming to the attention of the Most High, Aspexia Rugaton, or her infernal magistrix queen, Abigail Thrun, you probably just blew it, Lou.
Well, we can't have everything.
If you wish to support this AI reading and others like it, please visit patreon.com/askwhocastsai. Any help is appreciated. And thank you to executive producer John Doe 7776059.